There's no bright star leading where you are, so I'm singing for you. The snow's coming down and it muffles the sound of the cars going by in the night. A change in the street as it covers concrete.
Welcome to The Math of You, a podcast about formative media from when we were young. I'm Lucas Brown. Welcome back, everyone. It's been a while. And 2020 being what it is, I decided I needed to give all of you a special Christmas gift. So for the next 2 weeks, I have some of my favorite guests on to talk about Christmas media and Christmas memories. This week, co-host of I Will Fight You and Gem Jammer, Annie Creighton, will join me to talk about Rankin-Bass Christmas specials. Along the way, we discuss the dangers of falling asleep near an elf who wants to be a dentist, the ultimate darkest timeline fate of becoming a librarian, and a Grant Morrison-style romp across time and space, but it's a reindeer chasing a baby. We'll finish the show with our signature cocktail and let you know how you can become a guest on The Math of You. Editor's note before we get started, this is maybe my second or third time recording in our new house, and I'm still trying to find a space where I can get a good sound. As a result, throughout this episode, and through the future episodes for a little while, I'm gonna sound a little bit boomy and not quite as clean as I normally would. Sorry about that. We join this conversation already in progress. So for those who may not know you, why don't you say who you are and what makes you a beautiful and unique snowflake?
Hi, I'm Annie Creighton.
I do several podcasts and video series with a whole bunch of gay weirdos. I don't know.
Such as?
Okay. Well, I do Gem Jammer, which is an actual play 5th edition Spelljammer podcast, which is sci-fi fantasy garbage. We all play a whole bunch of gays in space having gay space glitter adventures. There's a talking hippo man. There's monster boyfriends. There's a planet that's just 1999 Brendan Fraser's The Mummy. It's all really good.
You also, you had to stat hot yoga, if I recall correctly.
Right. We keep just sort of making up crap that our, like, Iron Age Viking era planet has invented that RTM then has to accept that is a real thing in canon. So we invented hot yoga. We invented mimosas, but not regular yoga. We invented brunch, but we have not yet invented guns or the printing press.
Sticking to the important stuff.
Exactly. All the important culture things.
I'm sure there was like a Hitchhiker's Guide joke or something where it was like, oh, you invented distilled liquor before anything else, and that really changed the course of history.
It's true, though. I also do Date Me Damn It, which is a video series where we play date sims and otome games and what have you. We recently played Hottiful Boyfriend, which is always excellent. That's the one where you kiss pigeons. And then we also do I Will Fight You, which is a pop culture opinion podcast. None of us have ever been able to describe it, but Lucas has to listen to it a lot because he edits it for us.
Yes, I am the producer for this wonderful thing, which is really an excuse for me to listen to it before anybody else does and hear the ridiculous nonsense coming out of you guys' mouth.
And that's all under the Crooked Russian Cam banner in general.
Still baffling to put on an invoice. One of the nice things about being the producer on I Will Fight You is I get to hear just how long each of you laugh at the really, really stupid running jokes that you guys come up with.
Yeah, you have really picked out a lot of the very weird iterations of laughter that my mouth does.
There is a certain gear you get where it's like you take one of those talk boy voice changers. So there is a gear that you get that is high level chipmunk where it goes like, It is literally like you've sped something up. And usually it is in response to someone saying, Papa, I'm lost in the woods.
Papa!
I've eaten nothing but rendering fat today.
Papa, please, I'm covered in butter and so plump and delicious. I hope I don't get eaten by a witch, Papa.
Papa, I found a jar in the freezer I thought was Grandma's secret ice cream, but instead was some lard. But I ate it. I glistened, Papa.
Papa, see, please this is the kind of... find me. I'm jam. I have just become a jar of jam in a little suit, Papa. I think see, I'm Boysenberry, kind of... Papa.
This is the crap I cut out most of the time, but I will stick it in the stinger. And the thing is, at one point, I messaged the group and I said, is 5 minutes of stinger self-indulgent? And the response from all three participants was, well, it's our kind of self-indulgent. So that's fine.
It's all self-indulgent.
It's a podcast. So the reason that I wanted to have you on today is because, I don't know if you know this, but it's almost Christmas.
Yes, it is. But I think Chris Sims is the one with that particular audio stinger.
I'm not putting in the drop until his episode, which is coming. But Hiro has gotten into the habit of every morning asking Alexa how many days until Christmas. And the first time he did that unprompted, it terrified us because he understands there is a robot that will do his bidding in the house.
Uh-oh. That's trouble.
So, for example, when Kimiko put on Bing Crosby Christmas music, he listened for a second and then he stopped it and made Alexa play Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh, but Hiro, it's Christmas in Killarney, Hiro.
Don't you like Melikilikimaka?
Don't you know what they say?
Melikimaka is the thing to say.
On a bright Hawaiian Christmas day, Hiro. The Bing Crosby White Christmas album was a mainstay in our household growing up.
If I check my Australia Post notifications, hopefully Chris Sims will have received my Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers Once Upon a Christmas CD that I sent him.
One can only hope.
Well, think is that was the record and then later CD of my childhood Christmases. It would be a question of whether it was too early to put on Kenny and Dolly yet. Listening to that as an adult, what I didn't realize is how many references to boning there are on that album.
Well, look, it's cold. It's cold outside, baby. It's cold.
Once Upon a Christmas has songs like Christmas Without You, which specifically calls out, making love isn't like it used to be, down by the fire, etc. And it's just like, I was very young listening to this and I did not get that. That Kenny Rogers was doing a soulful singing about how they used to bone down by the fire. Like he's Isaac Hayes or something.
Christmas songs have a long and storied tradition of being uncomfortably horny sometimes.
Which falls right into your wheelhouse.
Apparently.
Because I feel like that is one of the watchwords of the Crooked Russian Cam oeuvre is uncomfortably horny.
You know, we were talking about this the other day because one of the Date Me Damn It games we have on deck is Seduce Me 2, which is a sequel to the first game that we played was Seduce Me the Otome. And Seduce Me 2 has sex scenes, but it has a mode where you can change that to a fade to black or just like no sex scenes at all and skip over. We talked about what we're going to do and we said, you know what, let's just leave the sex scenes on because we hate the way these games are written so much. It'll be really funny. And we just sort of reflected for a moment on how our original podcast, The Gem Jam, which was a Gem in the Holograms recap, we had a rule that was like, we are trying to keep this as PG as possible with language. Then we started I Will Fight You, which is a PG-13, which means you only get one F word per episode, which Kit keeps breaking lately. But everything else gets bleeped. And then we have Gem Jammer, where you just cuss indiscriminately. And we also have Gem Jammer, where we have a mini series that we have started doing where we just straight up read and discuss smut. So it is a gradual scale of increased horned.
Yes, it is very horned. Almost like, what's the word I'm looking for here? Defensively annoyed horned. How dare you? You come into my house and you do this to me. God. I mean, yes, it's working, but God.
That's pretty much the whole premise of my Gem Jammer character, really.
I thought you were going to say of your life, and I was going to say, oh, Annie.
No.
Of your character? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Juliana is very annoyed with things working on her in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
But one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on for the Christmas episode is recently, it'll probably have dropped by the time this is released, the latest I Will Fight You is about a fairly terrible, kind of baffling Rankin Bass Christmas show, movie, I guess?
It was a film. it actually had a theatrical release. It was Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, one of the later Rankin-Bass films.
A baffling Rankin-Bass film. And then I told you that with the exception of one drinking game in my first year of university in the dorms, I have never seen a Rankin-Bass Christmas special. At which point, there was a lot of emphatic typing. And you said, I am going to fix this. They're very weird and strange, and I will tell you about them.
I was very excited, because if someone hasn't seen something that I feel like they should have seen, the correct response, I think, is excitement. One of the standard pillars of my friendship with my friend Rio is we have a list of movies that Rio hadn't seen, and I was like, we're fixing this. I'm adding this to a list now. And we keep adding stuff, but one of the first ones was Street Fighter the Movie, which is important, which is something that I inflict on most people that I love.
Which is part of the reason why you have a Napoleonic M. Bison staring at you from your desk at the moment.
I do. I do. I had to rearrange my desk a little. It used to be off to my right, but now it is actually about at the 2 o'clock position. So if I glance away from the monitor, there he is.
And he is saying things like, I'm sure, I have a horse.
Of course.
Yes. For those who have not seen this photo, just imagine that portrait of Napoleon on a massive rearing horse, but it's Raul Julia as M. Bison.
It's maybe one of the most perfect images ever created by mankind.
So yes, your relationships are often built around making someone watch a thing.
Yes.
Now, I did watch some of Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, like just flipping through it on the internet archive to like make gifs and stuff.
Right.
Mostly of Frosty looking at a badge and going,
F,
which, yeah, it's baffling.
Right? It's exactly as I described. It was so weird.
There's no reason for it. So I'm trying to describe, there is a weird manic energy to these and things. I used to think of them as claymation, but I have been informed they are actually not claymation.
Correct.
They are, are they stop motion technically, or what is the...
Yeah, they're stop motion. I think they actually have a specific technique for that, that they, if not copyrighted, then they at least pioneered. They have a specific term, but escapes me at the moment.
The one that everyone knows, and the only one that I've seen, is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Right. Definitely their most famous. It's pretty much their earliest one, too. Rankin-Bass did a whole bunch of stop motions. They also did a couple of cartoon ones, like Frosty is their most popular one of those. But stop motion was really sort of their bread and butter.
What I remember of it was that it involved an elf who wanted to be a dentist, mm-hmm. a guy named Yukon Cornelius, mm-hmm. and a character that my drunken friends insisted on calling the Abdominal Snowman.
Right. Which is too bad, because he was not as buff as you would want him to be with that name.
See, I gave you the out on the Hot Monster Boys, and yet you bring it back.
I have a motif, Lucas. I have to lean into it.
Fair and accurate. So I have been told, Anford, that you have seen, in fact, all of these Rankin-Bass movies from a single Kodak.
I tapped out of a lot of the later ones, but I have seen more than the average person. I will say that.
More than the average bear. So do me a favor. I want you to tell me, what is this special thing about them that makes them this enduring thing, apart from the fact that one assumes they make money? Otherwise, why would they keep making them? See this one, princess?
I imagine the thing is, at least with the Rankin-Bass ones, was that the first one, and I mean, there are people who are actual historians on these sorts of subjects. I am not one of them, so I am predominantly going to be talking out of my ass here, just as a little asterisk, don't at me.
So what else is new?
I would say that the thing was that with the original Rudolph one, a lot of it was probably that it was just very cheap to buy the rights to and then show every Christmas, which is, you know, part of how we get so many of these things that are considered like traditions anyway, like how It's a Wonderful Life was really cheap to buy at some point, so they just kind of aired it and advertised the hell out of it, and suddenly it's like an enduring Christmas movie. Though, of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, he's so good.
Do you want the moon, Mary?
Jimmy Stewart.
I'll climb up and I'll lasso it down.
Anyway.
He is, in fact, very good in that movie. I managed to, I think it was mid-year. It was before COVID. It was sometime in January. Have a day off in the middle of the week. And so I did my favorite thing, which is I went to see a movie in the middle of the day.
Nice.
With the old people. And I do my best to try and see an old movie if I can, because one, they're cheaper. And two, I kind of like the idea of seeing something that most people have only seen on TV on a big screen to see how that changes it.
It's a good experience.
That's how I saw the red shoes for the first time, which, if you can see the red shoes on a theater screen, fucking see the red shoes on a theater screen. It's incredible.
There's this Halloween tradition they used to do. I think they still do it at my university, at Indiana University, where every Halloween, they would take the huge, enormous theater space. They would put a big screen up there, and they would have a guy come in and play the whole frickin' organ, like the whole pipe organ that they have there. And he would perform along with a silent film.
Wow.
Like we saw the original Phantom of the Opera that way.
That's cool. I like it.
It's really good.
I think seeing any movie that big will like positively dispose me towards that movie, no matter how forgettable that movie is.
Mm-hmm.
Example, they used to do a thing here in Sydney. They do a couple of them now, where it was called Moonlight Cinema, which is where down by the edge of the ocean, they would erect a giant movie screen on like pontoon boats. And you would go and sit outside on these kind of like not even like sort of like bench seating in grass. And they would sometimes bring like inflatable chairs and stuff that you could rent or and stuff like that. And they would sell like nice food and wine and things. And it was very much, yeah, you'd go and you'd see a movie and it would always book out immediately because it was great. And I saw the kind of forgettable working title, Kirsten Dunst, Paul Bettany comedy Wimbledon there. It's a tennis movie.
And that was fun.
It was fun. I am still positively disposed towards that movie. It involves an aging Paul Bettany inexplicably winning a tournament. It is like sports movie vibes, but also romance vibes. It's really dumb.
I mean, you do like sports movie romances.
That's true. See the cutting edge.
Toe kick.
Coming back to It's a Wonderful Life, I saw It's a Wonderful Life on a proper big screen.
Nice.
It's good.
That's the way to do it.
Also, as an adult, like again, seeing that movie, I think I saw it for the first time when I was 15, because they didn't really play it much in Canada. It's very much an American thing. I saw it at school towards the end of the year when they didn't want to do any work anymore, so the teacher put a movie on, and he put on It's a Wonderful Life, and I was, like, transfixed. I'm like, I really liked it. But then seeing it in the theater, I realized, like, the part that affected me more, especially as a parent now, was Kid George Bailey trying to stop the pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
From delivering the wrong pills. Like, you've put poison in there and the pharmacist is drunk and hits him because his son had died. And, like, the emotional intensity of that back and forth, like, nearly drove me to tears. I was like, oh my God. Thinking of a kid that little attempting to do this thing was way more impactful than George canceling his honeymoon to save the savings and loan. Building and loan, rather. You old building and loan. But then what I found is, especially during the Pottersville stuff, it's kind of beautifully, amazingly shot, even though they're being covered with dish soap.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Some of the stuff of, like, the, you know, oh, God, I've forgotten their names. His buddies that then become the cops in the Pottersville thing.
Bert and Ernie.
There you go. See, I was going to say Bert and Ernie, but I'm like, no, it can't be that.
Oh, no, it's actually Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, so Bert and Ernie turn up, and it's like he's in the foreground just barely lit with his, like, distraught face, and they turn up as these terrifying silhouettes in the background. And I actually, like, take a moment where I'm like, that's kind of terrifying and beautiful. Nice work, Frank Capra. You know, I wonder if he did anything else. You know, if he ever had a career. Do you think so?
Honestly, I'm just inordinately fond of the way that they portray the female characters of just like the most horrible thing that could ever happen would be Mary doesn't get married to George Bailey and instead she becomes a librarian.
A spinster librarian.
Who wears glasses. I always love that one delivery of, she's just about to close up at the library.
Here's the thing, though. I have a long history of accepting glasses as an intensifier of attractiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And when Donna Reed has her glasses on, good Lord. Doki doki or what?
You have a type.
I have said this before. You take an attractive person, you give that attractive person glasses. It's like hitting that little bar on the pinball machine where everything starts flashing. To the point where Kimiko was watching Love Island for work, because she works on the Australian Love Island, so she had to watch the original one. And there was a character who I hadn't really noticed, and who suddenly put on a pair of glasses, and I actually, like, literally sat up from my Switch game and said, who's she? And she turned and she said, shut up. She's been there the whole time. Look, I accept this about myself, but coming back to Christmas movies,
You gave a tantalizing promise, which is that you were going to explain how frickin' weird some of these Rankin Bass things are. So please, let's step into the weirdness and actually talk about this.
Okay, so the thing about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is that in and of itself, it's all structured around that one particular song. It was capitalizing on how popular that song was and made it even more popular in the process. I mean, look, it's bare bones. Reindeer games. Can't participate in them. Made fun of by other reindeer.
For being a freak.
Because his nose was big. There was a fog, and Santa was like, oh, this might work. And then you take that framework, you spread it out so that you've got all these blank spots in between the actual, like, tidbits, all these lampposts where you have to get from one lamppost to another in this big murky darkness. And they said, let's add a plot about an elf who wants to be a dentist.
Okay.
Hermie doesn't want to make toys. Hermie wants to be a dentist. He wasn't at elf practice.
Oh, it's just you.
Out of everything this elf could desire as an alternative career, they landed on dentistry. And here's the thing, Hermie does dentistry later in the film. You know the dentist in Little Shop of Horrors, the one Steve Martin plays in the filmed version?
Yeah.
It's that kind of dentistry. The abominable snowman gets, like, conked out momentarily, and Hermie just jumps on this guy, pulls out a pair of pliers,
oh, Jesus.
Pulls out all of his teeth. No anesthetic, no nothing. I think maybe he says something about the abominable snowman being bad-tempered because he has cavities from eating so much candy. Don't quote me on that. I feel like he was probably eating reindeer, but that's my guess. No, he pulls out all of his teeth, and then the abominable snowman is happy. He's a happy friend now.
So it's Androcles and the lion with rotten teeth.
Because this small elf yanked all the bones out of his mouth.
Is he happy or is he just sort of grimacing?
We won't know for sure. It's not like he can really talk all that well anymore. All of his teeth are gone. What's he gonna make the sounds with?
See, I would never want to fall asleep around Hermie.
Exactly.
Hermie will take advantage of my moment of weakness to get into practice.
Yeah, Hermie is bad at making toys. Hermie wants to be a dentist.
Hermie's bad at making choices is what he is.
Sure, there's very few career options at the North Pole. That's fine. But Hermie decides that he's going to leave the North Pole and travel with Rudolph, who is also made fun of and, like, emotionally abused by his father. So that's something.
Okay, can you do your Rudolph's dad voice, by the way?
That's my son Rudolph. He's a freak. We have to cover his nose. I'm pretty sure he sounds like that.
I was going to say, there was some, like, some proper Jim Carrey faces going on in the video feed for this call just then.
This is the thing about video with me. What you have to understand is that I have a cartoon character face. And I feel like this gets missed out a lot because most of what I do is an audio-only medium. I have a cartoon character face. I do weird shit. So Hermie wants to go into dentistry with a whole bunch of elves who, by all accounts, don't seem to have any teeth. So he runs away from the North Pole along with Rudolph, who also runs away because he's got a glowing nose. And for some reason, everyone thinks that's hilarious.
Stands to reason. I mean, you know, flying is no big deal, but if you have a glowing nose that can disperse fog, then that's, I've heard that's a popular circus attraction.
Apparently this comes up a lot. I don't get it. And then, like, they run into a man named Yukon Cornelius, who sings a song about silver and gold. He says gadzooks a lot, I think, and he just wants to find precious metals in the middle of the ice.
There was a real vogue for prospectors in films for a long time. I forget the guy's name. He played it in The Treasure Sierra Madre, and he played it in a lot of other movies, too. His role mostly involved jumping up and down and saying things like, yippee, there's gold in them, there are hills.
America was really hot for prospectors at some point, I swear to God. I mean, they love them rootinist, tootinist, gold huntinist, ride in the wilderness. I'm just talking about Big Thunder Mountain at Disney now.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Hang on to your hats and glasses, because it's here's the rootinist, tootinist, ride in the wilderness. They just do that every single time, every time the ride happens.
It was amazing. You actually morphed into Joan Cusack as you did that. Specifically on the word ride, you in fact turned into Jesse from Toy Story 2.
I mean, Jesse from Toy Story does also talk about a couple of rides. There's a Toy Story Land now.
Of course there is. Actually, God, you're like the perfect person for me to ask about this. Because
I
remember going to my friend's house when I was a kid.
Okay.
One of those friends who's like a peripheral friend. So not a friend who you'd go to, like a neighborhood friend.
Gotcha.
And he had rented a game on his NES. And it was specifically a game where we didn't know it at the time because we didn't know enough about Disneyland to understand that what Space Mountain and stuff was.
Okay.
But yeah, you went around to the different rides and you did like stages based upon it. Yeah, like you said, Big Thunder Mountain was all a Western thing. And like, but yeah, it was a NES game. And I'm like, I don't understand what this is. But yeah, we had like overview world where you'd like walk around to the different rides and then you have to go and complete missions there. I have no idea what this game is. Do you know what this game is?
I mean, it sounds like a game they made, but...
You know all the Disney things, Annie.
Lucas.
What?
Lucas.
Yes?
What year did the Nintendo Entertainment System come out?
I don't know. Probably a long time ago. I got one when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
No, wait, 8. I got one when I was 8.
Uh-huh.
And you're young. I just realized where you're going with this. You're young, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
God, Lucas, damn it.
I was born in the same year as The Legend of Zelda.
Fuck's sake. All right.
1986, Lucas.
Maybe it's because you were explaining stop motion animation from, what, the late 60s or mid 70s? Maybe I just mistook you for older than you were.
No, I am old, but I am not that old. I played some NES games, but it was mostly like Duck Hunt and Tetris. I didn't really get stuff until like the Super Nintendo was out.
All right, fine. I've used Google and I have found Adventures in the Magic Kingdom.
So you didn't even need me for this.
No, because...
You could have Googled where, you know, the place that has the vast sum of human knowledge, the internet.
Fine. I was going with human experience, but fine, Shamey. All right, bringing it back to Christmas, damn it. So,
okay.
You were talking about this mission and how Yukon Cornelius wants precious metals and how Hermie wants to be a dentist and Rudolph wants to be accepted.
Right. But none of that matters, because then they find the Island of Misfit Toys.
See, this I have heard about, mostly because it is referenced by anyone who was friends with a goth in high school.
Yeah. It's just like, it's a land of living toys who are all kind of weird in some way. And, you know, if you're queer, you can find some kind of metaphor in there.
Mm-hmm.
The most famous of them being the Charlie in the Box, whose only flaw is that he is named Charlie and not Jack, and therefore no one wants him. There's also a bird who can't fly, and that's important.
Penguins can't fly. Ostriches can't fly. Many birds can't fly.
No, it's like a bluebird, but it can't fly. It can only swim, somehow.
Okay.
Ruled over by a flying lion.
See, that sounds like an improvement, not a misfit thing. It's like you are taking something that is very good, a lion, and you are giving it wings to make it better.
Oh, this one isn't a toy. He's just a flying lion.
See, now in the podcast, I am going to cut in the Rory and the Flying Lion song from Blazing the Monster Machines, because they literally go to a land ruled over by a flying lion who is a statue brought to life by a sunstone.
This is just a flying lion. He's a flesh and blood lion who flies and talks and sounds a bit like Aslan.
So he's Lion Jesus. Flying Lion Jesus.
Right, but this is Rankin Bass, so we sort of obliquely pay lip service to the non-secular aspects of Christmas, but we don't always want to talk about it. Unless it's the little drummer boy, which is the story of the boy from the drumming song about Christmas.
Right.
The kid who just sort of like woke up the baby Jesus, just jamming.
The drumming equivalent of that guy on Easter Sunday who had the weed whacker in the empty lot next to us when I just got Hero down. I nearly did murder that day.
Being in the Southern Hemisphere on Christmas sounds tough.
Yeah, it's bad. Actually, no, it's not. It's great. It just makes telling time really difficult when it comes to long distance. Like, honestly, I've told people, I grew up in a temporal zone. The years are marked by the seasons. And now, having spent coming up on 18 years in a place where it's summer all the time, it's very hard to mark time. I will say, oh yeah, you know, this happened, blink, 5 years ago. I almost said last year. And so I think, as anyone who's been, for example, staying at home for the last 9 months will tell you, it's very hard to mark time when things are always the same.
Yeah, I live in the Seattle area. Right now, it is in the mid-40s Fahrenheit. It is kind of chilly. It is a little bit rainy. And it is completely clouded over. And it's going to be like this from the beginning of November until about April.
Yeah, so it's a day that ends in Y in the Washington area.
Right.
Coming rocketing back. So we just went on a weather tangent, Annie.
Right.
This is how much the pandemic has affected our minds.
So there's a flying lion.
We had a flying lion and we chose to talk about the weather.
Well, he's barely in it, honestly. He's just like, yeah, you guys can stay here if you want because you're looking for something else. I guess you could practice dentistry on the Charlie in a box.
Here is a small toy. Why don't you rip his teeth out?
And also throughout this whole movie, there's an abominable snowman that is threatening the North Pole for some reason. There's also a subplot about Santa needing to eat more because he's not fat enough to be Santa yet. He's very skinny. It's the off season. He loses all that weight.
Somewhere, Tim Allen is writing furious notes.
So then, you know, at some point they decide, well, we have to go back now. But enough time has passed that Rudolph is now an adult. So it's kind of like a Bambi thing.
No one remembers the adult Bambi. Nobody wants to.
Exactly. And nobody remembers adult Rudolph, even though adult Rudolph is the one who, you know, pulled the sleigh in the movie. But he comes back and then Rudolph is useful. And then everybody is like, oh my god, I guess this is fine. Also, they defeat the abominable snowman, and Hermie pulls out all of his teeth. And then they're like, well, this is all fine. Maybe you can Cornelius find some money. He doesn't really matter. And then Rudolph is like, I'm only going to pull the sleigh if you can also actually rehome all of the misfit toys. And that's what they do over the credit sequence. There's an elf who gives all the misfit toys a little, like, parasol so that they can like float down to Earth and land in a children's house or something, except for the bird who can't fly. The elf looks at the bird, looks at the parasol, looks at the bird, looks at the parasol, throws the bird and waves.
They do a murder on the bird. They drop that bird from orbit.
You nuke that bird from orbit. And so let's think about this. We've got our original framework, reindeer made fun of, reindeer games, question mark, fog, Rudolph sleigh, and somehow you fit in dentist elf, old-timey prospector in a parka, misfit toys, flying lion, abominable snowman, Santa needs to be fat, elf practice. And they slot all this stuff into the framework. And that's how you get, like, the Rankin-Bass formula. You just keep adding shit. And eventually Rankin-Bass moved into a formula that was, you keep adding shit, and then you also add a whole bunch of contemporary stars, like Red Skelton.
I'm sure Paul Lind was in there somewhere. The various cast of Hollywood Squares, that one Brett White would probably tell me the name of every person involved.
It's a lot. And that's just the first one.
So I know there are a series of frosty ones. And I know, thanks to the I Will Fight You episode, that Rudolph becomes a baby again in all of his ongoing adventures.
Yeah, after that, they just junk the adult Rudolph model. Like, they just threw it away.
Nobody wants
this. And
they're like,
baby Rudolph only. Now baby Rudolph, on the same night that he saved Christmas, now has to save the very concept of time and space itself, because the baby New Year has been kidnapped by an enormous vulture named Eon, who needs to live another 1,000 years.
So he is, in fact, a rock of ages?
No.
Yes!
No, he's a large bird.
Yeah, a rock, R-O-C, is a large bird.
Oh, I hate it.
I'm so happy that you didn't get it, so I got to explain it.
I hate it.
He's a giant bird named Eon. Of course he's a rock of ages.
He's a vulture? Rocks are entirely different. But he kidnaps a small baby. His name is Happy. He has big ears, and everyone laughs at his big ears until finally, at the culmination of the film, everyone explains that no, Happy, they're not laughing at you. They're laughing with you.
Incorrect.
Incorrect.
They are laughing at you, Happy.
They're absolutely laughing at his giant ears. And so this baby with giant ears hides them under a big top hat. So it's a baby in a top hat and a diaper, just sort of running around through the Isle of Past Years, which after every year, it gets its own island out in an archipelago somewhere in the sea of space and time, I suppose. The only way to get to these islands is to travel on a whale who has a clock in his tail named Big Ben. Rudolph has to search for the baby New Year amongst all of these past years, and he picks up friends along the way, like a caveman who hangs out with dinosaurs. Don't worry about it.
I was going to worry about it.
The dinosaurs all look really bad. They all look like incredibly wrong dinosaurs. You know, the Tyrannosaurus very much upright.
Dragging tails. The Brontosaurus lives in a swamp. You know, the usual.
The Brontosaurus lives in a swamp because, of course, all the tails drag on the ground. None of them are planar to help them balance or anything. It's all, don't worry about it.
Well, you know, Annie, because of their enormous weight, they would have to be half submerged in water, or else how would their weight exist?
It's fine.
I was very badly burned for some bad dinosaur books when I was a kid.
It's fine. He picks up a caveman who lives with these bad dinosaurs. He picks up a knight from King Arthur's court, which was a real year. And then he also picks up Benjamin Franklin.
As you do.
Who is the year 1776, as I believe.
I believe there was a musical about it. Several musicals, in fact.
Several.
At least three off the top of my head. Thanks to Craig Getting telling me about being in a childhood musical called Frankly Franklin, where Ben Franklin's gout sings a song.
His gout.
Yep.
Anywho, Rudolph encounters all of these spirits to help him save the baby New Year. The current year is voiced by Red Skelton, by the way. Then they just sort of tell the baby New Year that they're laughing with him, not at him. And he's like, okay, fine. I guess I will take on the mantle and ensure the flow of space-time.
Become a century baby and eventually meet Jenny Sparks and Elijah Snow in a comic written by Warren Ellis. I don't think that actually happened. But you know what? The minute you were describing the different islands that is each a year, I feel like that is a Grant Morrison-ass idea. I haven't read all the Klaus spinoffs. Chris Sims would know this. But yeah, it could very easily be. And also, the island that is 2020 is on fire.
Yes, that is very likely.
Everyone's coughing and it's on fire.
And now Rudolph just sort of has these sorts of adventures. Frosty, meanwhile, was brought to life by a magician. An evil magician.
Wait, no. There must have been some magic in that old silk hat he found. I remember that.
And who did the hat belong to?
Well, judging by the stuff we just talked about the different years, I presume Abraham Lincoln, who was then a wizard?
No, it was an evil magician. Some kids found a hat from an evil magician and put it on their snowman, and the snowman came to life and said, happy birthday. And then he learned about death.
But not evil Lord Winterbolt. That's a different magician.
No, that's a wizard. This is a magician. Completely different. This one practices illusions, Michael!
Oh, that kind of magician.
Honestly, I just feel like I need a lot of opportunities to say the word magician because it's dumb as hell.
A prestidigitator.
You can't take anything seriously when the word magician is involved.
And he learns about the concept of death, a fact that haunts him throughout the rest of his films.
Yeah, no, I mean, Frosty actually dies in Frosty the Snowman. They have this whole thing where, like, oh no, Frosty hangs out, the weather is getting warmer, and then his best friend Karen, a little girl, decides, well, we have to take you to where it is always cold. We have to take you to the North Pole.
And so she asks to speak to the manager.
So they have to try and get their way to the North Pole. It doesn't really work, especially because Karen is not really dressed for this. She has a little coat for her, like, after-school adventures. She's not ready for sub-zero climates, but she tries anyway. So Frosty sacrifices his life to save Karen and put her in a greenhouse, but he can't leave the greenhouse for some reason. So Karen wakes up after almost dying from the cold to find that Frosty is a puddle with a little magician hat on top.
You know, for kids.
Yeah. Frosty thinks a lot about death.
I went there once. I didn't like it.
The Frosty the Snowman special is a lot about death. The Frosty the Snowman 2 special is a lot about...
Go on, say it.
Fucking.
I've had to bleep so many Frosty fucks out of that new episode. It would go away and then it would come back like a boomerang. And someone will say, that's because...
Frosty gets a wife! And then they have to have a showdown with Jack Frost, not to be confused with the other stop motion animation Jack Frost, who's like just a nice man who wants to like be human, but God says that Jack Frost has to have a wife and a house and a horse.
Because apparently that's what makes a man. I remember this bit.
That's what makes a man. Yes. This is a different Jack Frost who's mean.
Iron enough to make a nail. And no, we're not going to get distracted into the Tiffany Aching stuff. So this is a different Jack Frost to the one who...
And this is also not to be confused with a separate Jack Frost than the Rise of the Guardians Jack Frost.
Yeah, and again, I'm now scared to watch that movie.
Oh no, it's perfect.
All I know about it is it has the cool Santa, voiced by Alec Baldwin.
Bandit King Santa, yes.
And I've heard that Kit refers to it as uncomfortably fucky. And I'm just like, I don't want that. I don't want that.
Okay, here's the thing. It's not actually uncomfortably fucky. The thing about Rise of the Guardians is that it came out at a time when Tumblr was uncomfortably fucky about literally everything.
Oh.
In the same way that Tumblr was uncomfortably fucky about Steve Carell, the Who's goth son, and Horton Hears a Who. In the same way that they were uncomfortably fucky about the onceler who should have sex with himself, according to Tumblr, in the Danny DeVito The Lorax movie. Rise of the Guardians by itself is not uncomfortably fucky. It's honestly a very, like, cute adventure movie. Hugh Jackman voices the Easter Bunny.
Does he use his natural accent?
Yes.
What they won't tell you about Australians who live in Hollywood is eventually they all start to sound like people who are attempting an Australian accent because they have to pretend to be Americans and they are surrounded by Americans. And as I am walking proof of, an accent will like creep on you and slowly infect you if you're surrounded by it all the time. So you hear Hugh Jackman speak in his normal Australian accent, and about every third word sounds incredibly American because my dude has been pretending to be a Canadian who is actually voiced with an American accent for a long time? Wait, 20 years now?
It's been a while.
I remember reading an article once, like in the lead up to Logan, Hugh Jackman said something to the effect of, I haven't had my own body hair or facial hair since 2000. I was like, Jesus, he's right.
That poor guy.
I'm sure he can dry his tears on his giant piles of money.
But yeah, no, he uses his actual accent in this one. The Easter Bunny is Australian.
That's good.
Because, you know, giant sort of rodent-esque marsupial creatures with huge feet that hop a lot.
Yeah, also, rabbits are an invasive species in Australia. They're pests here.
You got that whole fence.
It's proof of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's rabbit-proof.
Mm.
Come on!
Night of the Lepus based on that.
But you told me that Rise of the Guardians actually is based on a children's book.
Yes.
That is also good, apparently.
I've only read about three of them. I haven't read the last two. Yeah, no, Rise of the Guardians is based off of a series of children's novels by William Joyce. William Joyce is a children's book writer and illustrator. Rather than his usual picture book fare, these are more of like early chapter book kind of readers. Like the margins are huge in spacing and the language is very simple and there's lots of illustrations everywhere. But like, I've been loving that guy's book since I was really little and I had copies of Dinosaur Bob and A Day with Wilbur Robinson. The dude always illustrates in like these lovely, big, soft, black and white, like Art Deco styles. The Disney film Meet the Robinses is based on one of his picture books.
Oh, okay.
He was the showrunner for Rolly Poly Oly. The DreamWorks film Robots is based on some of his works.
What?
No, like any like cool Art Deco robot-y things. That's often his wheelhouse. He's done a lot of work in animation.
Wow. Which, by the way, I may have to force an episode about Robots into I Will Fight You because that's a baffling film.
Oh, Robots is so weird.
It's very weird. I had to watch it several dozen times because it was on a big screen at a Borders that I worked at when it came out.
Ah, yes.
The only film that has not ruined for me is the 2005 King Kong. Every other film that was seen that way got horribly ruined by repetition, except for King Kong.
But what, King Kong was long enough that you didn't always have to watch it all the way through?
Also, I liked it enough that I was able to just, like, pop in and pop out.
Even the bugs?
Loved the bugs.
Ugh.
Thought the bugs were sick.
Ugh.
When the big penis monster ate Andy Serkis's leg and then his arm and then his head.
Ugh. That was a bad time for me in the theater. Almost as bad as when we saw Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and they did the bit with the spider egg in the zit.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
Yeah, that was real bad for me personally. Great for the guy sitting next to me who definitely came to the whole movie just stoned as hell and had a whole bag lunch with him.
Oh, there is a thing about, like, do you do this too where you're in a theater? Like, okay, I feel like there is a whole subsection of things that people do that nobody talks about. And because you would feel weird saying them out loud. One of which, for example, is when you get someone's address, looking that address up on Google Street View. Especially if that address is in another country, to be like, I want to see where my friend lives. And then the minute I went to say that out loud to someone, I'm like, I can't say that because it makes me sound like a terrifying stalker.
Oh yeah, Mac and I have once got an address for a mutual acquaintance and we were like, I kind of want to do some light face stalking. Yeah, okay, let's just look up where they live. It's fine. Oh look, there's the listing on Redfin. It's a lovely home.
See, I didn't go that far. I just go to, what does their house look like on the outside? What sort of neighborhood do they live in? At which point I am baffled by the grimness of some American subdivisions.
Hmm.
When I'll look and I'll just see this single terrifying gray house with like four houses spaced between it and the next one. And I'll be like, ah, that's grim. And otherwise I'll be like, That's a lovely house. Like, for example, Jamaica Plain in Boston is a lovely suburb, and I know this because some of my friends live there, and I've looked around and I'm like, that's adorable. But the other thing is that, yeah, if I am in a movie and it's not densely packed, I will look around occasionally and see how other people are reacting to the movie. So when I saw, for example, The Red Shoes, and spoiler for a 80-year-old movie, the lady dies at the end. She commits suicide, and she throws herself in front of a train, Anna Karenina style. When this happened, clearly a guy who was next to me, maybe like four seats down, who had brought his own snacks, bless him, in Tupperware, was watching this and physically reacted with shock when that happened. I will do this on the video so you can see the demonstration of this physical shock.
That's like a whole body spit take.
Listeners, imagine that you're on a nice walk in the sun and you just walked into a spider web. Like, that is the amount of physical movement and motion that this guy brought out for this character death. And bless him, he was clearly very into the movie. Where are we going with this?
Jumping back from that to King Kong. Jumping back from that to something else.
Two movies that were not ruined. Oh, yes, and How Weird Robots Was.
Jumping back to William Joyce. Jumping back to Rise of the Guardians. Jumping back to Rankin Bass.
But before we leave the kids' book thing, so Rise of the Guardians wasn't the one where the Santa recruits two kids to fight dark elves, was it?
No, that's Santa Calls. That is a picture book.
About children being recruited into the war against evil.
Yes. Although it turns out, at the end, what it actually was in these two letters that are printed on the pages that you can open up and unfold, which is adorable, it turns out that the little sister actually wrote Santa saying the only thing she wanted for Christmas that year was for her big brother to play with her again. And to like her again. And so the whole dark elf thing is she gets kidnapped by the dark elves, who are, of course, all working for Santa. And so the big brother and his friend have an adventure to save her. And they have to throw snowballs at elves. There's, like, toboggans. It's very cute.
That's adorable. I'm presuming they don't slaughter a bunch of dark elves on the way, because that would be, like, a shit day at work for an elf. Where it's like, we're helping do this thing. Oh, four of us died, of course. But, you know, we made the lesson work.
Oh, it's all snowballs and Rube Goldberg-style machines, I believe.
And when you think about it, isn't that what Christmas is all about? Terrifying Rube Goldberg machines and elves enacting an elaborate subterfuge.
And dentistry.
Can't forget that. So I think we have ranged far afield and come back, but I think we will have one more thing. And I have not prepped you for this, so I understand if this might take a moment to think about it.
Okay.
Often people have a particular Christmas present memory that will be like a big thing they got or a thing they'd never expected or a giant surprise. But I want you to think, what is the most you Christmas present that you received as a child? One that you think, if there was one of those internet memes going around where it's like, show a picture of yourself from the camera roll that says exactly who you are. If there was a Christmas present form of that, what do you think it was? Because I can tell you mine, which was, somehow, through the course of reading a Hardy Boys book about it, I had determined that snowboarding was a cool thing, and also a thing I could do, despite not living anywhere near a mountain, never, you know, having enough money to go skiing or do anything of the sort. And I also loved the Ninja Turtles, and so my dad got me a kiddie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles snowboard and left it downstairs from Santa. And there is a picture of me losing my mind at this clearly mocked up to be a snowboard, like sledding thing with, you know, just two little loops for your feet instead of, you know, boot clips or anything. And then me realizing very quickly that one, I did not have the balance to snowboard. And two, very rarely were there hills big enough to get any kind of speed on this thing before you fell over. So a wildly impractical thing I was really excited about, even though I had no ability to use it at all.
So I was in elementary school, I think, probably like fourth or fifth. Maybe sixth grade or something. What happened to me was I woke up really, really early that morning, maybe 3 or 4 a.m., delirious. Because I woke up with no provocation, no warning, with the flu.
Uh-oh.
On Christmas morning. Couldn't find the energy to actually get out of bed, so I just sort of sat there, drifting in and out of delirium for several hours, thinking about, I don't know, confusing my life with cartoons that I had witnessed and, like, slowly pulling myself out of those, until eventually one of my parents walks down the hall past my door, and I make this, like, zombie-like groan, it has been described, to get someone's attention. My dad or my mom walks in and discovers that I'm very sick, and I spend the rest of Christmas morning chugging grape-flavored Pedialyte. And that is incidentally the Christmas where I actually receive the American Girl doll. And it's one of the newer ones. It's the American Girl doll of today, which was one of the first times they started doing like modern day dolls rather than the historical line, which had been, you know, mostly what they did up until then. The idea was that you pick a doll that has like all the features you want because you're like a child. It's obviously you want the one that looks the most like you for roleplay purposes, clearly.
Yeah.
So I end up picking one that is like the closest-ish. The problem is that all of the dolls have really long hair. And I have, right now, my hair is past my clavicle, and that's about the longest it's ever been in my entire life. I had a bowl cut from about the ages of, like, 5 or 6 until I was about 13 and started growing it out a bit. I have always had short hair. So, like, we received this doll. It actually got shipped to me a couple of years ago, so it's in my house now. It's, like, this 90s doll wearing, like, jean dress with a giant jean hat with a sunflower on it and wild leggings. I think it had an alternate outfit that I put it in that had, like, a deep purple bomber jacket, like a Letterman jacket. And, like, a hat. It came with a computer, which is, like, this huge CRT monitor sized for the doll. And, like, if you click a button that is the entire keyboard, a little essay about what I did on my summer vacation pops up.
Bless.
We eventually took this doll because I couldn't stand this doll having long hair when I didn't, because I had a whole bunch of complexes about, you know, feminine things as a kid, which is a whole other set of issues. We ended up taking this to the haircutting salon in the mall. And this hairstylist, bless her heart, said yes, sat there with a doll in a chair, like in front of the window even, so passersby in the mall could see what was happening, cutting a bob on this doll's hair and styling it appropriately.
It charged you $25 with matches.
Probably did.
Unless she was seized with the Christmas spirit.
My parents were very patient. This girl was very patient.
That's kind of great, actually. I kind of love that story.
Yeah. I don't know that it's the most me thing, because I feel like my particular idiom has evolved quite significantly over the years.
I did presume there would be a dragon involved somewhere in this story. But I do like this mental image of this blossom-ass doll sitting in this chair, getting given a very stylish bob by a very patient hairdresser.
Yes. Who is definitely not being paid enough for that, but I mean... Who knows exactly what they worked out with my parents.
That is an essential worker right there.
This was the haircutting salon in the tiny mall in this, like, little town in rural Indiana. It was right next to the anchor store for the mall, which was a Kmart.
Sure.
Right. American Kmarts aren't great. I think they're mostly bankrupt now.
Well, there's still Australian Kmarts, and they're equally not great. They're better than they used to be.
I think they're better than American Kmarts.
We had a Zellers when I was a kid. Zellers was a Canadian thing and had a restaurant on the side of it. A very sad, ooh, quiet restaurant that my dad liked because it never had crepe.
Sometimes the Walmart had a McDonald's in it.
See, yes, when we finally got a Walmart in the late 90s, it did come with a McDonald's. There was already a McDonald's in the mall, but then you could go to the little McDonald's at the Walmart. By the way, Walmart is called Big W here.
What?
Yeah, they call it Big W.
That's more syllables.
Also, McDonald's is referred to specifically as Macca's. Not Mickey D's or any other shortening.
Fine.
Except for Kimiko, who refers to it as Donnie's. We're going to get some Donnie's on the way home.
Donnie's?
Yeah, I don't know why. No other Australian has confirmed that they have used this expression, but she does.
Whatever floats your boat. Gotta get them chicky nugs.
Gotta go to Donnie's. Get them nugs.
Get them nugs, boys.
But coming back to weird stores that I remember, I did put this on Twitter because it was one of those memories where it hit me like a swinging door and suddenly it was all I could think about for that morning. There was a shop called Consumers Distribution Limited.
That's a weird name.
Isn't it? Isn't it incredibly exciting to have this royal blue background with a serif font that just says Consumers Distribution? But what it was, you'd go in and see, if you've been to the UK and have been to Argos, then you know what I'm talking about. But you would go in, and instead of there being stuff on display or, you know, things you can try on or whatever, there was, in fact, it was like a bank where you'd go in and there would be an island counter in the middle of the area. And then there would be a row of like sort of like teller windows. And what you would do is you would go to the little island and you would look at this laminated catalog. You would pick what you wanted from the catalog and write it down on a special form, kind of like you're ordering dumplings. And you'd bring that form to the front and the lady would ring it up for you. And then they'd go into the back where they had a warehouse that would then pick the things off the shelves and then bring it out to your car.
The whole store is the back?
The whole store is the back. And what they were doing is they were passing the savings on to you. We don't pay for expensive showrooms. We bring it straight to you, so you pay less. But for a kid, what that meant is that you would go to the toy section and every Transformer was there. Every G.I. Joe was there. Every Ninja Turtle was there. Every My Little Pony was there. So you'd look at this thing and I would just stare at it. At one point, bless him, my dad tore a page out for the Transformers so I could put it up on my wall and talk about the ones that I wanted. But I look back now and like the big Transformer, and this is what like shocked me back to reality. The big Transformer, the Power Master Optimus Prime, was $29.95. The big Transformer was less than $30. That baffles me now. I know, inflation. We live in inflationary times. But the idea of the big toy, the one that you would get for Christmas, costing less than $30.
I don't think even, like, the big Beast Wars toys were that cheap.
No, they were not. So, yes, clearly Consumers Distribution Limited was, in fact, passing the savings on to us.
But at what cost?
At what cost? If they later tried to do an online store and everyone realized, no, that's just like every online store, and they quickly went bankrupt.
Oopsie-doo.
I don't know why we've gone on this tangent. I guess it's because capitalism infuses all things. But I am bringing it back to Christmas to say to you, Annie Creighton, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, season's greetings, and all the other good things to say. So thank you very much for coming on this very special episode of The Math of You.
Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas and whatever Yule holiday festival you celebrate as well. May the Yule goat make it to completion this year. That sounds a little weird. May the Yule goat survive 2020.
You did make it sound like the goat needed to come to end the year. I'm not trying to make it weirdly fucky, because I heard that and I went weirdly silent because you said you wanted the goat to come to completion. And I'm just like, no.
No, that's fair. Honestly, that's fair.
What a perfect note to end on. Snow the beats against the window pane. The fire inside is warm. Thank you very much to Annie Creighton for her time. And look, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not an eggnog person. I never have been. Jeff Stormer was very horrified to find out that fact, and it may have cost me my guest spot on Talking Nog. But honestly, this year of all years, I've started to think maybe it's time I give like proper homemade eggnog a try. Of course I left it too late, but when Jeff was describing how to make it, it occurred to me, well, this is just a flip. I know how to make a flip. And so I present the Winterbolt. In a shaker, combine 1 ounce of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of tawny port, 1/2 ounce of honey, 1/2 ounce of cream, and 1 egg yolk. Shake without ice to emulsify, then add ice and shake again really hard for like 30 seconds. Strain into a cocktail glass and garnish with fresh nutmeg. May your hooves be quick, your turns be sharp, and your nose be glowing. Enjoy. There's nothing left to do. Remember last year when you were on your own? Swole spirit. December rolled around and you were counting on it to roll out. Well, everything's gonna be cool this Christmas. Everything's gonna be cool.
The Math of You is recorded in Ryde, New South Wales, Australia, and is written, hosted, and edited by yours truly, Lucas Brown. Usually, new episodes come out whenever I get them finished, but you'll be getting one just next week. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show in the future, simply send an email to themathofyou@gmail.com and tell us what you'd like to talk about. You can follow the show on Twitter at themathofyou, and you can follow my wacky adventures at Lokified, L-O-K-I-F-I-E-D, on Twitter and Instagram. If you have a few dollars kicking around and would like to directly support the show, you can go to patreon.com/lokified and pledge as little as a dollar a month. I would normally say you can pledge as much as you want, but come on guys, there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of people who could use your money more than me. If you'd like to support the show non-monetarily, you can go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever they're calling it now, or Spotify or Stitcher or anywhere like that, and leave me a 5-star rating. It helps people find the show. You can also write a review, and if you send it to me, I'll read it out. Won't that be nice? If you like the music I play on the show, there's a Spotify playlist for that. You can go to bit.ly/themathofyou, with capitals at the beginning of each word, to find a Spotify playlist going all the way back to episode 1 with every song I've ever used. That's a huge amount of music, including this song. It's Everything's Gonna Be Cool This Christmas by The Eels. And because Annie's a big Ted Leo fan, this episode contains other music by The Both, which is Amy Mann and Ted Leo, and they rule. They're really good. They've somehow snuck into, like, some of my most played bands of the year. Anyway, I update the playlist as soon as the episode goes live, so make sure you subscribe and get that new music in your ears. Next week, The Math of You All-Star Chris Sims is going to be here to talk about Christmas traditions and a Charlie Brown Christmas. Join me, won't you? Good. So there you go. People won't get my scintillating "I bought ribs for no one but myself" story.
Look, sometimes you just need ribs.
Yeah. And what's funny though is that I find that with American recipes, there's just certain things that Australian recipes don't do. Like so many American recipes use powdered garlic and powdered onion.
Yeah.
And until I started making American recipes, I had never purchased these things.
Mm-hmm.
I would use onion or I would use garlic. And like today, because I buy them when I make my pulled pork, which is actually Chris Sims' pulled pork, which is the root beer pulled pork.
Ah, yes.
Which is the recipe that will not die. I've used it for like brisket. I've used it for pork shoulder. I've used it for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like making the brisket. I'm like, okay, a teaspoon of powdered onion. Got that. And oh no, I have no powdered garlic. So I'm like digging through my spice rack. I'm like, why don't I have any powdered garlic? Did I throw it out? Like, what happened? Oh no, did I use it all up? And then I'm like, oh no, I honestly don't have it. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh no, what could I do? And I look and there is a full bulb of garlic sitting in a bowl to my left. And I'm like, oh, that's right. I can use garlic as a substitute for powdered garlic. It's a crazy plan, but it just might work. He is 100% a tattletale. Like there will be a passive voice report from daycare where it was, Hero was bitten. There was an incident. He's never active.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll get in the car and I'll look back and I'll go, who bit you? And he goes, TJ bit me. Like, cool. And I'll say, what happened? He's like, well, I poked my finger at him and I put my finger towards his mouth and then he opened his mouth and he bit me. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. So you poked him and he chomped you. That is your own fault.
Have we learned an important lesson about provocation? No. No, we have not.
Of course not. Consequences are not related to actions. That would be foolishness.
We are three. We don't understand these things.
Oh, I know I put it on Twitter, but I'm going to say it again. I was amazed because he was suddenly naked in the way that three-year-olds can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be like, "What? Why are you naked?" And he said, well, because we're going to Nana's today. Uh-huh. We don't wear our jammies to Nana's. Well, no. So I took my jammies off. So you did. And now you're naked. Yes. We wear clothes to Nana's, he says. And I go, so you want me to do that last part? Yeah. So it's like, all right, so you almost got there. You nearly made it.
Like point A, point B is right here. And then as we get close to point B, we veer off.
And then there is point, what's that shiny thing over there?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I have to go headlock a dog. which poor Junior.
Oh, no. So.
Well, I'm old enough to do the weird old computer bragging thing that people do, where you, like, brag about how terrible some of your first computers were. Doing the thing where you're like, oh, we didn't have the Pentium because only the rich kids had the Pentium. We had the 486 enhanced, and we were running Windows 3.1 because it couldn't handle Windows 95. But I was able to go on the internet if I cleared my temporary internet items every 15 minutes, or else the computer would run out of space. And then I will look at them, and I will put on a spooky face, and I'll say, and we had an external modem. It ran 9600. It was from Texas Instruments.
Ooh, a TI. Fancy.
Oh, you bet. I know. I had to stare at that for a long time.
Yeah, we had gateway computers.
So, an easy-to-buy computer that then led you into a more complicated heroin computer?
No, it was the one with the cow box.
Oh, right. Okay. I was just like, what are we talking about?